So I haven't been in the hall for a number of weeks. Other people have been giving the Dharma talks. So I asked some of these people who've been giving the talks, and, you know, we have a lot of, we have intensives going on around emotional healing, Dharma, wisdom. So we have a lot going on. And as well as I'm teaching a class in basic Buddhism and facilitating an intensive on emotional healing. So when I asked people, what should I talk about today? They said, suffering, which is generally not a very happy, uplifting topic on a beautiful morning like this. When most of us are going, why is he talking about suffering on a beautiful morning? What a bummer. So again, if every morning was beautiful and the weather was perfect and everything was good, we probably wouldn't be coming here, would we? We come here, we undertake meditation, we develop our capacity to walk a spiritual path, because life is not always peaches and cream. Right. So it's really, and that's, you know, going back to the Buddha 2,600 years ago, I mean, that was really, he just felt there had to be another way, you know, there had to be another way that people could really, in the midst of this life, people could be at peace, people could be open-hearted, people could be kind and good to one another, that it's all possible. So before I talk about this, let me just, and I won't go into in depth because we talk about it in our Buddhist teachings, but when Buddhism talks about suffering, that's really the wrong word. That's a word that people use to translate it, but the Sanskrit word is dukkha, and dukkha really means unsatisfactoriness, right? Which is very different than suffering, because suffering means suffering. It's physically or emotionally painful. And that's certainly, those things certainly happen in life. Unfortunately, they happen too much. And much of it is things that people impose on themselves or people impose on other people. It's kind of sad. But in this term dukkha, that's often translated as suffering, the Buddha really implied something much, much more universal than the obvious types of sufferings the human beings experience. Fundamentally, he meant that this human life of ours, this worldly life of ours, is fundamentally unsatisfactory or will always create dissatisfaction because it is fundamentally based on experiences that are transient, because everything is impermanent, everything changes. They like us, they don't like us. We gain, we lose, right? We get what we want, we lose what we want. We get what we don't want, we don't get what we want, right? Pain and pleasure. So basically what the Buddha said, this endless kind of ordinary life that we're all moving through, which is always changing, always up, always down. He said this whole drama is suffering because it's fundamentally unsatisfactory from the point of view. It doesn't give us what we want. And what do we really want? For ourselves, for our loved ones, for our world, we want what? We want happiness, right? We want peace, peaceful mind, calm mind, open mind. But because of this world is endlessly changing and nothing is stable, that, you know, every time we try to hold on to something, it slips away, right? I mean, all the pleasures, you know, and are there many pleasures in this life? Lots of pleasures, lots of enjoyable things. And yet they're all transitory. They're all time limited. And at the end of at the end, whenever that pleasurable experience or what enjoyable experience or that success or everything's going well, whenever it ends, we circle down, you see. And so we're endlessly like the rat chasing the tree, the cheese in the maze. We want happiness. Yeah, we'd like a deep, well, sense of well-being. I mean, that's what we'd like. And yet, you know, we don't experience that. And then he even took it to a deeper level and said, just being so identified as a self, a separate self, separate from everyone else, separate from nature, lost in the world of I, me, mind, my, mine, he said, which is the ordinary human experience, he said, that's suffering. Because there's always that sense of disconnection, of not being part of, not being connected to. Even when we're with people, there's always that sense of distance or anyhow. So I just want to say, all of that is in the word suffering. Yeah, so one of the things that's very obvious when you listen to people is we don't like to suffer, do we? I just spent the day with my grandson, you know. He doesn't like to be bored, right? You know what I mean? He doesn't like to be bored. And boredom for him means what? There's nothing stimulating going on. Right? So if there's nothing stimulating, so when he's being stimulated, he's what? Especially when he's being stimulated by activity, but especially video games. he's very happy, he's very engaged. But as soon as that comes to an end, you can see he's bored, he's dissatisfied. And he doesn't see that the boredom and dissatisfaction is related to the stimulation. Right? You know, it's like a circular thing. Yeah, so the first thing is, you know, can I really acknowledge very clearly that my own life, even if it's going well, the lives of others, the lives of the world, this fundamental pervasiveness of this dissatisfaction, this always looking for something else, right? Needing, wanting, seems to be just something that sits deep in the human heart. So we're always restless. We're always looking outside, right? So, first thing is, can I recognize that and recognize, even at a deeper level, that whenever I am suffering, the cause of my suffering is within myself? Very hard for us, right? Because we are raised in a culture where the cause of my suffering is what? What's the cause of our suffering? What? Other people, right? The weather, society, people, politics, you know what I mean? What? Right. And again, it's really not saying that I am all the cause of my suffering. There's lots of sufferings that are imposed on people by other people, by society. But where does that suffering arise? Where do I experience that suffering? See, that's the key thing. Where do I experience sadness? Where do I experience anger, irritation? Where do I experience worry and fear? I mean, where is that experience occurring? Is it occurring outside me? No, it's occurring in my own mind. So this is very significant that we make that shift. It's not, again, it's not as if we're not affected by other people and what goes around us, but how it arises is always within ourself, within our own heart mind. And so acknowledging that, so when we therefore say, I want to have a peaceful mind. I want to have a loving heart. I want to have equanimity in my mind. I want to be more patient. I want to be more, you know. Where is all that going to occur? Only within our minds. Right? So the first step is a willingness to acknowledge that everything that I experience is occurring within me. Right. So let me just stop for a second. It sounds so simple, but it's very different. Any questions about that? I mean, anybody think that's a lot of, that's a load of you know what? So please, for any of you new, feel you can feel free to, if it doesn't ring true or online, if you have any questions about that. Good. So either you're all just being quiet or you get it. It's all right. So first step is, can I acknowledge that when I am suffering, the cause is within myself? Because I am in a suffering mind state because of how I am reacting to, relating to what has happened or happening. Again, it's me who's relating to experiences based on my own conditioning, based on my own mind, based on the way I view things, based on the way I want to show up in the world. And so you begin to understand why, let's say in Buddhism, meditation is sort of a very basic practice, because meditation deals directly with what? The mind, right? It gives us a direct entry into that place that all our suffering, agitation, stress is occurring. Thich Nhat Hanh did a very, most people know Thich Nhat Hanh. He's my teacher and very well-known teacher these days, even though he just recently passed. He developed a very interesting concept. He called it, people need to learn the art of suffering. So most people would say, no, I want to learn the art of happiness. Right? We all want to learn the art of happiness, which of course is very much part of our practice, is learning how to be happy. But part of learning how to be happy is learning how to suffer. It sounds a little strange. There's an art to learning how to suffer. Yeah, so, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But when we think about that there's an art to suffering, and there's a way to transform suffering, we now get to something else which is very significant. And this is, and I've seen this in our members who've been practicing Dharma, exposed to Buddhist teachings, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And say, intellectually, I get it, yeah. I get all these teachings about dukkha and all that. But you know what I find out? That deep down, or not so deep down, they resist having to deal with their suffering. They'd really rather not, right? They'd really rather not. And so what do when we suffer, for most people? What? Push it away, right? Or repress. What? Bury it. Yeah. Escape from it. So that's, and do we live in an incredibly wonderful culture that is endlessly giving us possibilities of escape? You don't even have to go to the movies. All right, you used to go do something. Now you just stay home, right? You don't even have to go to the mall. You can shop at home, right? You know, Do you see what I'm saying? So, yeah, so, or else we get away from it by escaping. Right? So we either lock it away or we distract ourselves. Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Yeah, it's uncomfortable to suffer. And we don't wanna, and we don't wanna suffer. Because we wanna be what? Happy. Yeah, which is normal. But the way we're going about it, by always either repressing or denying or escaping, does not deal with the fundamental problem. And the fundamental problem is what? Us. Right? So when I say to my grandson, you know, boredom is arising within you, and you can learn to change, he doesn't want to buy that, does he? He's only 10. Right? He, yeah. But we are hopefully mature enough that we go, oh, yeah. So this ability to be open, that's maybe another very important thing, that we learn to be open to experience, and we acknowledge in this life, things go well, things don't go well. They love us, and all the emotional stuff that arises in the mind states, the first thing we have to do is stop this walling off or endlessly running away from, right? Which is what so many people do, right? I mean, I've met many people who come to meditation. You know why they come to meditation? Because they want to escape. Right? Oh, this is great. I can learn to really focus on my breath. I don't have to deal with my suffering. I don't have to deal with my miserable thoughts. Right? So even spiritual practice and meditation can be an escape. Right? If it's not understood that these practices are all about helping us to learn to be present to, and then how to transform our suffering. So this capacity to embrace all experience is key. We need to stop dividing ourselves up and pushing and, you know, pulling and pushing these away and pulling these in. And, you know, we're very busy manipulating the world and people to get ourselves what? Comfortable, so we think we can be happy. So much work we put into that. So this is another way. We accept everything just the way it is. Is that what we're supposed to do? No. Right? But this is really where healing begins. Right? We accept there are parts of me that suffer, that are suffering because of things going on right now, or are still bearing wounds from the past. Oh, so we don't wall off, we don't deny, we don't fabricate, we just are present to our suffering. This is the art of dealing with suffering. Right. Actually, in the Great Perfection Path, there's a slogan that says, you know, take adversity, you've heard me talk about this, take adversity as the path of awakening. You know, we have such a problem with that, right? Because we think adversity is something to what? To do something about. Yeah, fix it or make it right or deny it or go do something else, but to go, oh no, the adversity, our suffering is the very ground on which we learn to transform. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, he'd always use that great example of composting. Everybody know what composting is? Anybody know what composting is? Yeah, composting. So he says, you take garbage, you know, all that stuff, you know, from your household, you take that rotting food, and if you just let it rot, it what? It stinks. It's foul. But if you know how to compost, you can turn that garbage into fertile soil, loam, that you can grow things in. So it's a wonderful example. He says, you know, we need to learn to take these adversities, these difficulties, these emotional sufferings, and transform them, compost them, so we can grow what? What we want to grow, which is what? Yeah, happy and loving and kinder and more patient and more, you know, more at ease and more able to enjoy life. And right? I mean, that's what we want. But it's we can't do it by doing an end run around it. You know, that's what we want to do. We want to do an end run. We want to jump over it. But it doesn't work like that. So we now embrace it. We embrace it mindfully. We're aware. I mean, just to have the presence to say, to not deny, to not shut off, to not push away, to not act out, or to not go escape somewhere and do something, but just to be able to say to yourself, I am aware that there's sadness in me. I am aware that there's fear in me, or worry in me, or anxiety. I'm aware that there's anger or irritation or resentment in me. I'm aware there's jealousy, you know, whatever it is. I mean, this is why, maybe we should turn on the AC. Is it starting to get warm? It's all the, I can see more thing, yeah. See these little sufferings in life, you see? I mean, this is it, yeah, right? Because what's happened in the last half hour? Things have changed. There's a change, right? So a half hour, the windows are open, fresh air. We're going, wow, this is wonderful, right? We feel great. Half hour later, what's happened? Change. Cause and conditions change. And now people are beginning to suffer. When they can turn on the AC, and then we've got people saying, oh, that David's such an insensitive guy. He's up there just, you know? And we blame it on Dave. He's not paying attention. And you see? And nobody's listening to the talk anymore, right? I mean, that's how silly we are. So these steps I'm talking about are so essential. They're so simple, right? We understand what dukkha, what suffering is. We understand it's part of life. But we learn that we can relate to it in a way that not only does not increase the suffering, but actually transforms it. And we do that by first accepting whatever arises has arisen. And again, that simple mindfulness statement is your acknowledgement that I am aware of what's going on inside me. Now, how does this relate, for those of you who are new, to what we did this morning? You know, in our little 30 minutes of meditation, what are we doing? We've taken a posture. You know, we're sort of committed to being here together 30 minutes and not moving. Can you see? So if an uncomfortable thought or feeling or emotion arises in us, we can't just jump up and go to the fridge. We can't just jump up and jump on the computer. You see what I'm saying? We can't just call somebody up, can we? You see what we're forced to do in meditation? We're forced to sit with ourselves. And for many of us, that's not easy, right? For many people, meditation in the beginning is not a pleasant experience, is it? Anybody want to acknowledge it's not, you know? Everybody's going, right. I mean, can you see you know, we come to meditation because we want to really have a pleasant, you know, meditation is supposed to be good for us, calms the mind, peaceful, sounds wonderful. And then we try it out, and what happens? What? Misery. And we're trapped. We can't move. How wonderful. If we want to learn how to be with ourselves. You see? How to be with ourselves. And for many people, it's not easy, especially in our society, right? Go back a generation or two before all the media stuff and the distraction, you know, people were, you know, were with themselves all day, you know, but we are very distracted. We have all kinds of possibilities. So our capacity to be with ourselves is less and less. I mean, it's funny, one of the things we have for members here, we allow, well, not allow, but we encourage people to come on solitary retreat, you know, for 3-4 weeks. We just had people in for almost 3 weeks. And what I say to people, you know, I mean, outwardly people come because why? Because they want to work on their meditation practice, or there's certain things they want to deepen. And they think solitary retreat, having that experience, would be wonderful. But you know what else? Just being alone without the phone, the computer, is a rare experience for many people. You know, it's in our society, you know, just being alone with yourself for 3 days. And I can't tell you that most people who've never done it, they come with a lot of worry. I don't know if I can do this. I mean, they, you know, and these are grown-ups, you know. What are they saying? I don't know if I can spend 3 days with myself. I mean, that's for many people, that's a scary experience. But when you step back from that, you go, wow, that's interesting. What are they scared of? What are they worried about? You know, what do they think is going to happen? You're just going to be with yourself for 3 days. So this capacity just to be present to ourselves as we are and not freak out and not get restless. But again, it's a process as people learn. But people who are new today may go, yeah, this was not easy. Even to be with myself for 30 minutes and my mind and my thoughts and the sensations in my body, you know, it was a struggle. But, you know, it's a process. It's a transforming process. Yeah, so again, to have this wholesome view of suffering, right? And to see it as an opportunity, right? To learn about what goes on inside me and how I relate to the world, right? And then to really, over time, really get to know oneself in a better way and know, oh, these are the things inwardly that caused me distress, caused me to be stressed, caused me to be unhappy, caused me to be sad, scared me to be anxious, be angry, resentful. Because when we are really present to ourselves, and the more we are present and aware throughout the day, not just in meditation, but like throughout the day, like, you know, we're lay people, we work, we have families, we, you know, we're moving about the world. But just to maintain that awareness, what's going on inside me? So usually what's going on inside us is driving us, and we don't even know it, right? Our moods, our mind states are driving us. But we're not in touch. We don't know why we're feeling the way we're doing. But when you're mindful and you develop your capacity to be, which is just simply, it sounds so simple, just to be present to myself. You know, to know what's going on within me and around me, that's a natural capacity of the mind. But once we develop that, then we have a clearer view of what's really going on and what's really driving me, especially the things that are driving me, you know, in the direction of unwholesomeness, right? Unwholesome behaviors, unwholesome ways of speaking, unwholesome ways of feeling and thinking. We can begin to distinguish, oh, you know, there's all kinds of patterns which are good. You know, they're nurturing. They feel good. They help me show up in the world and feel the way I want to feel. And I see there are other patterns that I repeat, that are just the opposite. They're always just creating suffering for myself, difficulties myself, making life more difficult. So one of the things you'll notice when you think about, you know, the art of suffering is, you know, in Buddhism we have this concept of the second arrow, right? The first arrow is what we get shot with, right? So the first arrow is life, right? Things happen in life, right? things don't go the way you want, people don't say things the way they want, that we don't want, you know, you look up the news, right? First arrow, it's like you get shot, right? It's like, all right, well, that's a fact, right? I mean, the arrow's in me. Now, the idea of the second arrow is, because if you had an arrow in you, what's the first thing you would do? What? Pull it out. Right? I mean, is that true? Everybody would agree? You wouldn't go get another arrow and stick it in yourself. And you wouldn't go get another arrow after that and stick it in yourself. But what do we do? What do we do? Good. We twist it. We deepen it. Because what do? We just maintain it. Thinking, remembering. We just get ourselves all worked up, don't we? Can't believe she said that. Can't believe this is happening. Right? Which is doing what to us? Making us suffer. You know, the first arrow is enough. Right? The first arrow tells us, yeah, something happened. Something's happening. Is that true? Yeah. Now the question is, how do I want to relate to that in a way that not only may not increase my suffering, but also may help responding to the situation in a healthy way? In a wholesome way. But if we're just sticking more arrows in ourselves, and you know, I mean, it's not only that we twist in the arrow that's there, but then we can start adding other things, right? Other things we're worried about, other things we're scared, other things this person did, or other things that are going on in the world, and you know, and blah, blah, blah. And before you know it, we are deep into what? Suffering. And what's the cause of our suffering? Us, our minds, have just done it to ourselves. So this capacity of just accepting, acknowledging, being mindful of, holding it, so again, people say, "Ooh, I can't. It'll overwhelm me." That's because we don't know how to hold it. You know, you're just aware of whatever's arising, and you just hold it. You're just present to it. You acknowledge it, and you don't keep twisting the arrow or adding more arrows. And then if we don't go into reactivity, you know, reactivity means there's a lot of emotionality. When there's a lot of emotionality, is our minds clear? No, we're obsessive. We just keep repeating the same story over and over again. The same worry, the same fear, the same anger, the same resentment, the same sadness, the same loss. We just keep repeating it. But if we don't do that, if we acknowledge what we're feeling, we hold it, and then we look deeply into it. You know, what's going on here? Why am I feeling this way? Why am I reacting to something in this way that's producing this motion, this emotion, this mind state? You see, developing our own inner capacity to take care of ourselves. But as you know, this emotionality doesn't have a lot of intelligence to it. It's emotional. And it sort of floods. And it is not productive of clear-mindedness, which is what we need to respond intelligently to whatever the situation is. We need what? We need this capacity to see what's going on, to see it clearly, to make an assessment, and to know how to respond or not respond, depending on the situation. But if we're overtaken by emotionality, forget it, right? We just go into reactivity. So many of us have just stayed in these patterns for years, for decades. You know, some of them are very present, but you know, the reason like we have this emotional healing. I think there's a lot of this stuff that just part of life that just goes on that we have to deal with depending on our life situation, relationships. But then we have this other big thing, and this is like the whole emotional healing thing, which is a little different, which is, oh, I got stuff going on in me that's ancient. You see, you know, can you see the difference? It's like, you know, some of it was, you know, ordinary life worries or resentments, or somebody does something, you get a little angry, or, you know, but you deal with it. But then there's this old stuff, these old wounds that are in us. And so when stuff happens in the present, that comes up, you see? So we're like, you know, you can see that's also inflaming the situation or intensifying the response. So that's why in our community, we put emphasis early on in this emotional healing. Like if you're still carrying wounds from your childhood, you're talking about wounds. See, wounds need to heal. You know, the daily life stuff we can deal with once we have a fair degree of mindfulness and know what we're doing. But the emotional wound stuff is kind of deeper. And so we need to be able to distinguish, you know, what is, you know, what's just here and now kind of life I got to deal with, and what's just activating old stuff in me, right? And that's what's, you know, making it very difficult. You know, so part of this, my friends, is also a big change for us, okay? Because most of us are outside oriented, right? So we're always looking outside of ourselves, right? And even in terms of kind of this emotional stuff and healing stuff, we're really always looking at others. Right? We're curious about others, what's going on with you. But we have very limited capacity to be curious about ourselves. And I think part of this introspective piece of healing is we have to become interested and curious about ourselves. You know, like, what do I feel as I go through the day? And there's the kind of obvious kind of feelings that many of us aren't in touch with because we never ask the question and look. But also many of us have a kind of another kind of thing, which is like a low hum of emotionality. And everybody's different, right? I mean, some people, it's a nice, open, loving hum. Have you ever run into those kinds of people? They're very sweet, right? They get a nice hum. But some people, they're always humming like to a little bit of irritation and anger, resentment. You know, that's kind of their background hum, right? Or some people, their background hum is always just a little bit of anxiety, worry, you know, just a low hum of it. Some people have a low hum of kind of sadness. It's just, you see? And when I say low hum, it's kind of background, but it's conditioning us. We don't even know it because it seems so normal. You know, we don't even hear the hum. It's kind of subwoofer, is that correct? It's there, but it's, you know, it's not until we really, until we turn our, somebody tells us, oh, there's a hum there. We don't even realize, oh, well, I do have a low hum. And I might have had that low hum for years or decades, right? And that's also conditioning us. Condition in our mind states. Yes. So let me stop before I get into wholesome. So people online, so I've kind of presented a model, the art of suffering, all in the art of transforming suffering. So we don't have to be afraid of it. We don't have to be resistant to it. We can work with it. Same way, again, a gardener works with the garbage to turn it into soil that can be used to grow beautiful things. We, you know, again, the whole purpose of practicing is growing beautiful things in our mind, right? Such as peaceful and calm and ease, you know, all these good qualities. These are what we want to grow. But if we haven't kind of created the soil for these things to grow in, right, it's going to be hard for them to grow, you see. We have to clear space. You know, it's like, you know, if you're working with a new plot of land, you got to kind of pull out a lot of the weeds first, create some space. Turn over the soil a bit to create adventitious possibilities for growing wholesome things. So this is all kind of theoretical. So questions, practical. So, you know, how do we apply this? How do we live this? Maybe people don't buy the model that I've presented. That's fine. So please, people in the hall, just raise your hand and there's a mic. And people online, just raise your virtual hand, right? And Brent will see it, and he'll let me know there's somebody online. So the people online at the bottom of the screen, there's a raise hand icon. So questions, challenges, don't be shy.
Can you talk about when, in the instant that you have a feeling, an emotion coming up that is like an emotion you don't like pushing it away, can you talk about in that instance how to recognize and then work on transforming, like say something like feeling deprivation or rejection? Something like that, and it's just a conversation that you're having with someone and it just comes up.
Yeah. So again, the first thing is how you introduce this. What did you say? A mind state that you don't like.
Yeah,
like so stop. There's the first problem. Okay. That's the first problem. You know, we gotta take down that barrier because you already have set yourself up for difficulty, right? If there's somebody that you're going to meet with today, but all you hear in your mind is, I don't like this person, I don't want to have to deal with them, how do you think the encounter is going to go, right? You know what I'm talking about? I mean, right? Yeah, I mean, we are meeting with them, and I mean, just for your own peace of mind to go in there with an open mind and this is who the person is and I can, you know, it's okay, right? We'll make it a lot easier. But if we go in there, oh, I don't have to deal with this person. I really don't like this person. Oh, I can't wait, this is over. I mean, that's conditioning the experience. We don't even realize that. So this is very important, right? What you first said, that's the first thing I picked up on is I don't like it. So if you could get rid of that first and just go, yeah, I have the emotionality I have because of my causes and conditions of my life, right? This is what is with me. And I accept what is with me. I accept it all. See, many of us, we cut ourselves up. There's a parts of myself I accept, right? And there are parts of myself I do not accept, right? There's the parts of myself that I like the public to see, you know what I'm talking about, and then the parts of myself, ooh, I keep this hidden. Unfortunately, we only let our loved ones see this side of ourselves, just, you know, which is another problem we have. All right, so the first thing is, Molly, to really look at how I still resist parts of myself that are parts of myself, as valid as any other part, all the good parts, all the parts you like. If you got rid of liking, disliking, and just, this is just what arises in me, will make it a lot easier. Okay. And then the next thing is to know yourself, right? So if you know that you carry with you this way of responding to situations because of your childhood, whatever, you know, of, would you say deprivation, or what does that mean? Or
yeah, like deprivation, rejection.
Yeah.
Feeling less than.
Yeah, so this is a little technical, but it's something that I always say to people. But I think it's important to just help ourselves. There's no feeling called rejection. There's no feeling called deprivation. These are thoughts. These are assessments about myself. So if I said to you, when you are, whatever you, you know, when you are perceiving in your mind that somehow you're being rejected or whatever, how do you feel? See, how do you feel? This is very important. How do you feel?
A little bit sad.
Sad, okay. Sad, angry. Can be worried, you know, people are going to reject me, people, you know what I mean? So those are feelings. And the reason I say that, because we often describe things that are really thoughts, see? Because if I said to you, in reality, you're just having a conversation with somebody, right? I mean, have they outwardly said, Molly, I reject you?
No.
No, I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, is there valid, you know, proof in life that I'm being rejected, that they don't want to be with me, see? So that's your hint, you see, you go, you know, and again, it's the feeling state which is often most easiest for us to access. You go, ooh, all of a sudden I'm not feeling good, you know? I mean, things are, it's going to be okay out here, but inside things are kind of icky. And you're kind of, ooh, I'm feeling sad. Right. So you may not have time right in the situation to respond if you're dealing with it, but you make a note. And over time, if your Molly is kind of practicing full awareness of the emotions and the mind, she learns, ooh, there's something I bring with me into life, into my relationships and interactions that aren't really based on what's really going on now in reality, but I'm kind of bringing into it.
So what does that do? Like, when I hold it in that instant, it's kind of like, if I hold it, it goes away. Like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, we can learn to deal with things by simply saying things like that. Oh, it's okay, you know. But I would say from the healing point of view, when you see things over time, same thing, you go, yeah, there's a part of myself that I need to heal because it doesn't serve me. I mean, are people just rejecting you right and left in your life?
Of course.
Of course. Well, in that case, I would say that it's not some sort of something you made up. I mean, you see, there has to be a reality. So if you go, yeah, I'm just,
well, people are angry. They're coming at me with their stuff.
Uh-huh. They're coming at me with their stuff. Is this relation like to your job?
Yes, they're already mad by the time
all
I get there.
All right. So, I mean, it's very simple. It's not about you. You see, you make it about you.
Yeah.
They're not mad at you. I mean, you just said it. You see, the rational, mature, grown-up part of you said, yeah, they're coming already with their stuff. It's their stuff,
yeah.
Right? I mean, you could quit your job.
At the beginning anew, the first thing I wrote down.
Yeah.
I don't take life personally.
Yeah.
It's in the mirror.
That's wonderful. And yet, you, as you watch yourself during the day, you see
it's a habit.
It's a bad habit. It's a reactivity. And you realize over time, outside of the situation, I got to deal with this. I'm still carrying around these childhood kind of beliefs about myself and life that have nothing to do with reality. You know, that I'm still carrying, I'm still reacting to life with, and they don't serve me well. So that's the kind of work, that's the healing work. You see what I'm saying? Because you realize, yeah, again, if you were, but I mean, you know, I know people who are in the, you know, in the acting world, you know, trying to get into movies or theater, you know, and they're endlessly going on auditions, right? And what do you think their primary experience is? Rejection. You know, rejection, 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 rejection. So, you know, you either get out of it, the field, or you stop taking things personally. You realize, I don't have control over that. You know, I don't have control over, you know, all I have control over is what? Do my best. I got to feel good about that I'm doing my best. But I don't have control over. Yeah, but if I get rejected, 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 over time I may go, some people what? Persist, and eventually some people what? What? Quit. There's somebody who knows. Quits, or, you know, a few will actually make it. Yeah, and a lot of people just go, yeah, I don't, this is not a way to live. It's difficult, right? But if you're going to, I mean, if you're going to, I know something about your job. If you can have a job where you realize you're just a stand-in for, you know, things that these people don't like, right? And you happen to be the one they encounter. I mean, so you have to, you know, it's not personal, and you just have to learn to work with that. But again, when you find there's a part of you that's taking it personally, that's where you go, I need to take care of her. Okay? Are there other questions? Yeah. And there's a family program today, so the kids will be coming in. So it'll be fun. They'll come in, they'll tell us about what they've been up to. Yes, sir.
Hi. So I have a person in my life. I'm basically a mentor for them. This is a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
And this high school student is dealing with a few issues. They do not like school.
Mm.
Nothing new there.
Right.
They're not doing too hot at school. They're basically trying to scrape by at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They also have a sport, which they're very good at, but they don't like that at all either.
Mm-hmm.
And they're have some pressure to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these daily issues during the day as they rise. They have a lot of schoolwork they need to deal with. They got a lot of training. And then they have issues from the past that get inflamed at various points.
So the question is what, sir?
And so I'm, you know, I get frustrated sometimes trying to help this person who is in high school, and granted they are mature, but only to a certain point. And
so would you say that when you try and you're not helping at all, you see them continuing doing what they're doing, what goes on inside of you? What is your name?
Will.
What goes on inside of you, Will?
How can I rephrase this in a way that you will understand?
I'm not asking you that, sir. How do you feel when you're trying, you want to help, but nothing's working? How do you feel? Are you happy?
No.
How do you feel?
It's unpleasant.
Are you sad? Are you frustrated? Are you worried? You know, all kinds of things.
It's frustrated. It's also worried because this person does bring up self-harm at certain points when it reaches a certain height, the things that they're struggling.
Yeah, so So, okay. So the first thing is for Will to take care of his suffering. Right, Will? First thing is you take care of your suffering so you can be clear about this person.
Agree.
What?
Agree.
You know, yes, and when absolutely. We get into resentment or sadness or frustration, it's becoming personal for you. Right? So this is very important, especially if we want to help people, which many of us want to help people, right? I mean, we could be our profession, or it just could be friends, family members. A lot of people suffer in this world, don't they? Right? First thing, do I know how to take care of my own suffering? Right? Very important. Have I learned the art of how to do that? Because when I know the art of how to do that, I'm better able to help people do that for themselves. But the other big piece, Will, in this self-created suffering is it is often hard for us to acknowledge the limitations of our capacity to help people. Right? Right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. And are you a high school teacher or are you a...
No, I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37.
No. I said, are you a teacher in high school? Or
no,
you?
No.
So this is just somebody you mentor?
Yes.
Outside. Yeah. So, you know, to get ourselves out of the picture so we can see this young person clearly and understand their causes and conditions that have brought them to this point, right, in their life. Have you been part of their life from the beginning?
No.
Do you live with them?
No.
No. So you see, I mean, so can you acknowledge that your capacities are very limited to affect this child?
Yes.
Especially if they're not what? Receptive. You know. Again, I think these are one of these things that we come to accept that this is just the way it is, right? Is there suffering in this world? Do teenagers, the kids suffer these days? Big time, a lot of kids, right? It's very painful to watch, right? Especially when you think to yourself, oh, there's a better way, right? Or this kid, you see, wow, this kid has capacities or built, you know what I mean? And yet, this is the truth. So this is why our own capacity to know how to take care of ourselves. So we, no matter what, you know, remember I said, they love us, they hate us. They listen to us, they don't listen to us. They follow our advice, they don't follow our advice, you know? It's like, it's all okay. Just do my best. Does this make sense to you, Will?
It does. May I ask, once I accomplish that, successfully for myself.
Yes.
How could I begin to apply this model to their situation?
Well, you can understand them as they are. I mean, to me, the key piece of helping another human being, you know, it is our compassion. Or a job, you know, if it's a job, that brings us to encounter someone and to see their suffering and to want to help them, right? Mm-hmm. That's very human. Right. Now, our capacity to help that person can be very limited, especially if we're not understanding deeply who they are. So, you know, if our desire to help, if our all our own stuff is what's motivating us, that's not going to be sustainable. The first thing for me, if I want to help somebody, is can I get inside them? What's the world like to? What does the world look like to this young person? You know, inside them. What are their causes and conditions in their life, and what they go home to every day, and the community they live? You know what I mean? Like, what's that like for them? You see? Because then at least you have a chance to go, so this is their world, right? This is, you know, all of us have our world, right? I mean, we look around, and I don't know, how many people are online today, Brent? Just more or less.
79.
70, 80 people. All right. So here we are. And we look around and we all say, oh, we're all human beings. We're all, you know. No, we're all in our own world. Right? I mean, that's just the truth. We all have our own causes and conditions, our own life, things that have happened to us, the way we process what's happened to us, the things we like, the things we don't like. I mean, right? We're all in our own world. But you can see how hard it is to create a peaceful world if you don't know that, right? So if you want to help somebody, how can I understand them and accept that that's their world? And is there a way, skillful, creative way, that I can enter their world and maybe help them get out if they want? Right? But even, you know, for many people, just giving them the possibility of a different world, a different life, is not believable to them, you see? So sometimes we got to start very basic. You know, do they really believe that their life can be different based on their causes and conditions? And so that's, you know, that's the tension, right? You know, how do you give your all to help somebody and not be attached to outcome? You know, how can you make a wonderful effort and accept that it may fail? It takes a mind that knows itself, that's at peace with itself. Okay, Will?
Thank you.
Thank you. So I know there are more questions, but one of the things about children, you know, they don't have a lot of patience. So thank you, everyone. I hope that was helpful today.